Welcome to the Cybersecurity Readiness Podcast Series with Dr. Dave Chatterjee. Dr. Chatterjee is the author of the book Cybersecurity Readiness, A Holistic and High-Performance Approach, a Sage publication. He has been studying cybersecurity for over a decade, authored and edited scholarly papers, delivered talks, conducted webinars and workshops, consulted with companies, and served on a cybersecurity SWAT team with chief information security officers. Dr. Chatterjee is Associate Professor of Management Information Systems at the Terry College of Business, the University of Georgia. As a Duke University visiting scholar, Dr. Chatterjee is taught in the Master of Engineering and Cybersecurity program at the Pratt School of Engineering.
Hello, everyone. I'm delighted to welcome you to this episode of the Cybersecurity Readiness Podcast Series. Today's discussion is going to focus on tabletop exercises. I'll be introducing our guest shortly. When we were having the planning meeting, he brought out something which resonated with me a lot. And that's, how effective are these tabletop exercises? What are the mistakes that organizations should avoid for these exercises to be successful? How do you overcome the stale nature of tabletop exercises? Why are tabletop exercises important? They are often the mechanisms for organizations to test, retest their incident response plans. IBM's Cost of a Data Breach Report 2022 finds that businesses with an incident response team and a regularly tested IR plan can lower the cost of a breach by as much as $2.66 million on an average. I think our discussion today is of great significance. And this is the time where I'd like to bring in to the discussion Navroop Mitta, the CEO of ArmorText, a mobile security and privacy startup based out of Washington, D.C. Metro. And he will enlighten us on the various aspects of tabletop exercises and their effectiveness as a preparedness tool. Navroop, welcome.
Thanks, Dr. Chatterjee. Actually, before we jump in, there's actually a stat that I found to be even more telling as it relates to our discussion today from that same IBM study. Over half of breached companies bolster their spending post-incident. Their top investments are incident response planning and testing. So those who have already been through what you're trying to avoid are clearly saying they wish that they had been more prepared up front.
Lovely. Love it. And you know, anytime you have something to say that beats what I have to say, you make me look really good. Just kidding. But this is going to be a fun and informative session. So Navroop, before we get into the details, I'd like my guests to share a little bit about their professional highlights for the benefit of the listeners. So please go ahead.
Sure. Look, I'm a recovering cybersecurity management consultant. And while there's no 12-step program for that, I promise your listeners I've done some hard work to try and eliminate alphabet soup and acronym mania from my vocabulary. After a few years working in product startups prior to the dot-com bust, I actually got my start in cybersecurity at IBM's Global Services, where I was focused on identity management for critical infrastructure organizations, including banking, healthcare, retail, and municipalities. That's all about how you authenticate, how you authorize users to do what they need to do. From there, I went to join Deloitte and did the same with a focus on the federal government. But after joining Accenture, I found myself back on the road, and that's where I was right prior to starting ArmorText. I was still working to help secure and advise critical infrastructure entities, but now with a much more global focus. I actually ended up helping develop international cybersecurity practices, including a practice in the Nordics and Sweden, and a nearshore cybersecurity capability in Argentina. Now, my current company, ArmorText, is a leading provider of secure out-of-band collaboration for incident response, security operations, threat and intel sharing. Effectively, it's like a classified tier of communications for the private sector. And it actually has its genesis in those global efforts, right? Back when I was on the road and with Accenture and living in the Nordics, I helped draft a series of predictions for a global telecom OEM before the launch of the iPhone as a platform about the future intersection of security and their offerings, their customers, the carriers, and their customers' customers, individuals and businesses. We predicted the rise of next generation enterprise messaging, increasing use of messaging as a vehicle for external collaboration, as well as the security pitfalls and vulnerabilities products of that generation would be constrained by because of limitations in computing horsepower, especially on mobile devices. And we also predicted the likely increase in transparency requirements driven by regulatory requirements, among others. What we saw while working with companies during good times and crises informs not only our own product today, but also how we approach this topic of tabletop exercises and incident response preparedness.
Fantastic. In fact, when you mentioned out-of-band secure communications, it brought to mind an incident or two where the companies found out, to their dismay, that their main form of communication after a disaster had basically abandoned them. They had no recourse to communicate, and they didn't even have a backup plan in place on how to communicate when disaster struck. So that's something that we'll talk about in a bit. But let's give the listeners an overview of what are tabletop exercises in the context of cybersecurity threat management.
Absolutely. Look, the simplest definition for tabletop exercises are that they're simulations of real-world scenarios that allow organizations to test their incident response plans in a safe and controlled environment. The last thing you want to be doing is exercising your plan for the first time when you've already been hit, right? We just had the Super Bowl a few days ago, right? So I'm not sure when this episode will be published, but for anyone who is watching the Super Bowl, you know those players have been playing football their entire lives. From childhood onward, these are professional athletes who've trained day in and day out. And yet, despite being experts in their game, in their craft, they still drill. They still practice. They still take the playbook that the coaches hand them, and they run that playbook repeatedly. But they don't just run that playbook as is. They also run challenges to those plays, right? They vary up who's going to respond and how in order to see how the team has to adapt under differing circumstances. Because the start of that play, no matter how perfectly it's laid out, isn't going to be exactly how it's run on the field. You don't know what your opponent's going to necessarily do. So you have to run those kinds of drills and simulations ahead of time. It's the same in football. It's the same in an organization looking to prepare for incident response.
Excellent. Now, you know, the word tabletop tends to throw a lot of people off, including myself. It almost seems like trivial, tabletop. So I'd like to get your insight. Like, how would you compare tabletop exercises to a simulation? Are they the same? Are they different? Is one more effective than another?
Yeah, sure. So tabletops and simulations, they're not necessarily interchangeable, but they're not so different, right? The idea of the tabletop is that it can be a very lightweight tool or can go as far as a more complex and nuanced simulation, right? Effectively, what a tabletop is, it's a tool for organizations seeking to enhance their cyber resilience and readiness. They help you develop muscle memory and identify any gaps in your existing plans or other opportunities for enhancement, right? Unfortunately, too often tabletops are seen as something the cyber folks do down in their dungeons all alone. They're seen as a means of practicing how to execute log collection or restoration of downed services from backups and other more technical activities. But they're just as essential for the C-suite, senior leadership across the organization, and even the board. Senior leadership teams are actually increasingly being tasked with cybersecurity and, in particular, incident response preparedness oversight with potential for even personal consequences. Incident response preparedness and or the missteps that can occur along the way are now top of mind because of the DOJ, SEC, and the NYDFS here, but also in the EU as a result of NIS2 and DORA, right? None of that is constrained to just technical responses. So when we're helping organizations think through tabletops or the simulations they're going to run, whether it's a very quick, lightweight discussion around the table, or that's a much more nuanced, immersive simulation, we're asking them to assemble stakeholders like senior leadership, board members, IT and security teams, public relations, communications teams, legal counsel, human resources, and finance together, right? This is not about the technologists. It's not just about security. This is about operational resilience, and that means the entire organization.
So I so appreciate what you just said. Tabletop exercises go way beyond a technical exercise involving simply the cybersecurity professionals in the organization. It has to be a more holistic approach, which brings in leaders from different functions. In fact, I'll share a brief experience where I ran a tabletop exercise scenario in the context of ransomware in a cybersecurity class that I was teaching at Duke University. And the intent of that exercise was to assess decision-making when an organization had experienced a ransomware attack and their systems had gone down. So students had about 40, 45 minutes to follow through the prompt and respond to different questions. They had prepped a little bit, but I didn't tell them all the details, so they had to act on the spur of the moment. Of course, at the end, they could review how they responded, why they responded, what information they relied on to making those decisions, and we had a great debriefing session. The reason I share that is because, once again, big assumption underlying that exercise was there are lots of people who get involved, who get brought in when ransomware attacks happen. And there are instances where, in this particular company, when they got hit and their systems went down, every leadership member was calling another leadership member to figure out what should they be doing next. It was totally chaotic. And simply because they didn't have an incident response plan, and even if they had something in the book, it wasn't tested, it wasn't rehearsed. So I really appreciate you highlighting that.
That actually brings to mind one of the biggest benefits of running a tabletop, right? So you've already highlighted the 2.6 million on average that can, you know, be saved when you lower the cost of a breach. But one of the other big benefits is time. Time is a huge benefit. In fact, it was one of the biggest benefits actually highlighted in that same IBM study. We keep coming back to this. Organizations, both an incident response team and an incident response plan testing, were able to identify breaches 54 days faster than those who didn't have either of those. But the real interesting part of that is when you test your IR plan, even without having a formal team in place, just testing the IR plan alone was nearly as effective. You still had 48 days in time saved just by having rehearsed and tested your plan, just by having run the playbook before and understanding what it was to be in that scenario or something similar to it. And so you got the bulk of your benefit without even having to formalize those teams or formally put in place all this apparatus. You have the plan, test it. If it's not great, make it better. Test it again, make it better again, iterate through. But that practice alone will save you more than even all the recommendations around having these formal, complicated teams and everything else in place.
Very true. Now, Navroop, there are a lot of tabletop exercises out there which allows companies to rehearse their preparedness, whether it's a ransomware attack or whether it's a phishing campaign, insider threat, supply chain breach, denial of service attack. So there are lots of exercises or training materials out there. But let's say a listener right now is listening to this conversation and thinking, where should we start? Which resources or sources should we go to get the material to get going on it? Is that what you would recommend, or you'd recommend an organization to craft their own customized tabletop exercise?
All of the above. There are a lot of great resources that are already out there. There are a lot of professional organizations that specialize in tabletops, from some of the global systems integrators to the, you know, incident response, the digital forensics and incident response companies, all the way down to law firms, right? So there are a lot of different places you can start. You can craft your own. I've seen organizations in the automotive sector that actually have dedicated internal teams who are writing unique and new scenarios on a near monthly basis. They're running something like 10 different tabletops throughout the course of the year. Now, it's not always organization-wide. It's not always encompassing all the same participants. Sometimes it's tailored for a specific business unit or a specific portion of the organization, but people are doing this at all different levels. You can prepare for a tabletop in a lot of different ways. Another example is there's actually a tabletop resource out there. It's almost like a Dungeons and Dragons style card game, right? So Black Hills produces this. It leverages dice rolls to keep the game dynamic and to simulate how sometimes even the right action won't get you the result you expected. And that's an easy way for technical teams to host fun and dynamic tabletops for themselves that require little more than a corner of an office to play in. The card game actually helps you mix and match elements of different scenarios. You can then pre-select tools and procedures that you're going to have access to define what your toolkit is in that moment for responding. And then the dice actually keeps you guessing on whether or not any of those tools will work as intended. At the same time, I think it would actually be difficult to get a group of cross-functional executives in a Fortune 500 to play that game, right? And so the starting point for them would likely be very different than it might be for your tech team that's saying, hey, we're going to go run our own Dungeons and Dragons game in the corner, right? And unfortunately, I think that's the need of the hour, is actually increased executive and senior leadership involvement. And preparing a tabletop for them, well, that's a very different thing. I think there are different and better ways to do it for them.
You know, one of the examples that you gave about tabletop exercises being run by law firms, that, you know, struck a chord with me, because I keep advising companies that when you are engaging in cybersecurity planning, cybersecurity review, make sure there is a representative of your law unit there, because at the end of the day, a lot of these end up in lawsuits in the court of law. So you want to make sure that you have done your part, you've done your due diligence. So I'm just curious to know if you have the insight. Don't mean to put you on the spot. What kind of tabletop exercises are out there from the standpoint of, say, the legal firms being involved in it?
Great question. So two parts there. Yes, I agree. Have your own legal represented in the room. Absolutely, right? But also have your external counsel, or potentially do the tabletop using a law firm, so that it can actually be done under privilege. I'm not a lawyer. I can't give legal advice. But oftentimes I sit on the panel with the folks over at Crowell and Mooring. We'll talk a little more about them later, I'm sure, because they actually helped us publish a guide in this space. One of the things that they always bring up is that you can actually perform your tabletops under privilege, and so that part isn't necessarily discoverable, right? You don't want to necessarily have all the machinations that are taking place during a tabletop exercise to later on come to bite you in the rear, right? And so done right, tabletops are actually there to help you prepare for managing regulatory, litigation, and reputational concerns that often follow these events. So what you don't want is to, you know, exclude legal or to forget to involve them and human resources. Quite the opposite. They're key players in all of this.
Yep, very true. You know, talking about doing the tabletop exercises right, doing it correctly. There is a lot of guidance out there about defining the objectives and scenarios, assembling a team, developing or defining the roles and responsibilities, creating injects, establishing ground rules, and more. However, I'm sure from your experience, extensive experience, you've seen some best practices and you've also seen some not so great practices. I leave it to you how you want to present insights to the listeners, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. So let's start with what the objective of the tabletop actually is, right? So a lot of times we think about tabletops as being confined to incident response, right? When a disaster strikes, what do we do then? And so a lot of it goes into simulating an incident and your response and your remediation activities. But I think it's equally important to actually look at what it takes to stay alive. How do you simulate business continuity concerns, continuity of operations? How do you simulate your post-breach obligations? Oftentimes you've spent time preparing for an incident, but you don't actually know what it is you're supposed to be doing after a breach, right? And so I think one of the parts that keeps getting lost in this discussion, and then I'll go back to part of the other parts of the question you asked, is that we should all be trying to move our organizations towards operational resilience. And that means understanding what it means to have a minimally viable organization and understanding what has to be prioritized as a result during each of those scenarios. You can't save and bring up everything all at once. You can't return all operations to normal all at once. You're going to have to make priorities. How does the business think about prioritizing different parts of itself? What are the core operational functions that are going to do the most long-term damage, not just financially, but even reputationally? What are the components that are most critical to that minimally viable organization? And so you have to consider those parts. I think there's also a lot more though, right? And so, you know, when it comes to preparing those tabletops for the technical audiences, I think there's a lot of really great material to draw from there. But when it comes time to preparing a tabletop for non-technical audiences, you know, we alongside Crowell and Mooring, actually as a part of our give back to the community, just published Cyber Resilience Incident Response Tabletop Exercises 2023. Huge, long title. We published that back in October, and we're now gearing up for a mid-year refresh to include new scenarios based on evolving tactics, techniques, and procedures from threat actors that are actually in the headlines today, including rapid advancements in the use of AI by attackers to further social engineering. And we decided to start with these Mad Lib style scenarios to demonstrate how easy it would be to tailor the scenarios of the modules for current attacks by inserting the names of either systems or mission critical assets relevant into your org, so that you could then create the different scenarios that you needed to. So you could iterate through different systems or mission critical assets and then say, wait, what are the consequences of this being the impact? Or what are now the consequences of this other part of the organization being the impacted one? And then based on then the team that you've assembled for your different departments, right? We recommended that laundry list of different cross-functional folks to involve the executives of. You can actually work through the prompts and you don't have to do them all at once. You can work through them in pieces. We develop things for categories for consideration around, like plan initiation, who has decision-making authority, what are those lines of reporting, who should you be turning to quarterback in that moment, communications and collaboration, literally how will you communicate if your systems are down or the adversary is listening in, assessing impacts for different systems being hit and understanding which contribute to your minimally viable org and which don't, timelines for remediation. What options exist for remediation? What happens in the meantime? Notification obligations, internal and external customer and even regulatory communications requirements, insurance coverage considerations, and even when and how to loop in outside advisors, right? There's a lot that you want to start to do, especially for that non-technical audience, so that all of those non-technical considerations also become a part of muscle memory.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, talking about muscle memory and preparedness, I wanted to reemphasize something that you've been echoing throughout. And that is, you can engage in these exercises to test an organization's resiliency against different forms of threats. Another way of looking at it is, if an organization can identify what its cybersecurity capabilities are or should be, these exercises are a great way of assessing where they are in terms of maturity of those capabilities. It'll also bring out, identify, throw up the deficiencies, so opportunities for improvement. So if done well, such exercises are an incredible tool, incredible mechanism for long-term effective cybersecurity governance. That's one. The second, I want to recognize you and your organization for offering those free resources, those tabletop exercises. So if a listener wants to gain access to those resources, where do they go?
So you go straight to our website, armortext.com. There is a resources section. It's right there. Direct URL is https://armortext.com/cybertabletop. So Armortext, armortext.com/cybertabletop, cyber tabletop. And from there, you can go ahead and get the, you know, the entire guide. You can pull that down and it's a free resource. In fact, all the modules are actually marked with a Creative Commons license so that they can be leveraged in your own tabletops or mixed and matched with resources from others without having to worry about charges or copyright issues. It's all free.
Well, that's a great service to the community. Thank you. So Navru, once again, I go back to that question I posed earlier, that how do you do it well? What mistakes should organizations be avoiding?
So one of the first is making sure that your tabletops aren't stale, right? We were talking about that earlier. You want to have a dynamic discussion. You also want the participants to feel like there is something new each time they're engaging in these. So you want to actually have injects or conditional scenarios. You want to pre-war game out or have a professional facilitator think through what are some of the common misconceptions or preconceived notions that your team is likely going to be walking in with. One example of that is you know, what happens when you're conducting tabletops literally around a tabletop or via a stable static connection where every party who can and should be involved is present and aware. This goes back to that sports analogy, right? You don't just drill the plays from the playbook perfectly. You drill having to adapt regardless of how things started, based on how your opponent is responding. But, you know, a list of mistakes that we commonly see with tabletops, one of the first is, and I think we've talked about this repeatedly, is treating an incident response preparedness as a technical first or a technical only responsibility. It's not. It has to become about organizational and operational resilience. So you need involvement from everyone. Next one is not involving all the critical roles, including and especially folks like HR. Let's say you're simulating an employee-related issue, but HR was never present. Now that actual issue comes up, right, in the real world, HR doesn't know what it is they were supposed to do or when they're supposed to execute on certain steps. You're doing an internal investigation. When does HR finally make this known? How are they supposed to communicate about the internal investigation to not potentially damage the reputation of someone needlessly when it turns out they actually weren't the problem child, right? Another is simulating incidents, we talked about this, without considering the impact of communications outages or compromises. Or failing to put away the phones and laptops in day-to-day work and giving it your undivided attention and focus. Oftentimes, you'll see folks just rush into the room. You know, they'll be texting for a few on their phones, or they'll be looking at their tablets, and they won't really be paying attention. And that's a big piece of it. Another is failing to involve experienced facilitators to help create that dynamicism, right? You want to have those dynamic conversations, especially those injects. You want them to really be dynamic. You want someone who's already thought through N number of consequences down, right? Those unintended consequences, so that they can better challenge those assumptions instead of just checking the box. Too often, we've seen things come up like, do you have an incident response plan? Yes. If you were to have an issue, how would you communicate? We would move to an out-of-band communications. Great. What? How? When? Where? Who makes that call? None of those questions are addressed in the plan. The plan literally had a half a sentence about addressing communications. And then they wonder why, during an actual incident, why no one knows how to communicate. The other last mistake that I think is really important is being unrealistic about timelines. These exercises are going to be somewhat artificial no matter what. And so that artificiality can lead to, you know, an unrealistic set of timelines. It could lead to over-escalation or quick fixes. Just like, oh, well, we would just do X. We'd restore from a backup. Okay, how long does that actually take? How long is it going to take to pull those backups down? Where are they hosted? What if that piece got hit? What would we be doing instead? So you can't just have the quick fix. You can't over-escalate and just say, oh, well, everything is automatically incident. Wait, does this particular scenario even rise to the level of being considered an incident in the first place? Should we be putting the incident response plan in motion? Oh, wait, the impact of this is not great enough? Then maybe we're not, right? So you actually want to break apart some of that artificiality. It's way too easy to over-escalate or just hand wave quick fix and be done, right? So I think those are some of the most common and frequent mistakes that we see when folks are conducting tabletops.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And that forces me to bring in an analogy, which may or may not suit the discussion, but I'm going to put it out there anyways, because the thought just came to mind. You know, as a student, I would prepare for exams, especially math exams. And once in a while, I would get lazy about things and I would just practice a few problems and convince myself that if something more complicated comes, I can still apply the whatever I have learned and I'll figure it out. But in reality, I have found it the hard way that your preparation needs to be as close to reality as the actual test. So from the math analogy standpoint, unless I force myself to prepare for those hard, detailed problems, I'm unlikely to be successful in the exam. I bring another analogy, which is another activity very close to my heart, and that's tennis. You know, I watch a lot of tennis. I've played a lot of tennis. You know, practice. You have to prepare for the matches to the point that the coaches say that your practice matches should be more intense than the regular matches. Sometimes the practice sessions of the top players are even more intense than the real matches they play. So that's the level of preparedness that we are talking about. So going back to tabletop exercises and the intensity of it, how realistic they are, it has to be taken very seriously and not be a check on the box. Oh yeah, we have those in the books. We've tried out a few. We should be good to go if disaster strikes. That leads to the next question. I'm really intrigued about the communication failure that organizations have experienced as a result of an attack, and they haven't been prepared for it. I've heard about such incidents. Can you enlighten us based on your experience?
So back in 2017, when the NotPetya ransomware attacks occurred, they hit organizations worldwide. Maersk, Mondelez are some of the famous examples. In the case of Mondelez, if I recall correctly, it hit some 24,000 laptops, some 1,700 internal servers and systems. And what it resulted in was a complete outage of all internal communications. Email was down. Whatever corporate chat function they may have had was completely down. If they had a SharePoint, that was now down as well. And so they had to scramble to reestablish lines of communications on a WhatsApp, right? And they reconstructed phone trees, found ways to contact each other. Bob knew Sue's phone number, Sue knew, Julie knew, Adam knew, Ritesh. And as a result, you suddenly put these communication trees back together, right? Through phone trees. They then established, I think, a Yammer is what it was, for the executive kind of bulletin board that they can then use to post back to the organization. And they lost a lot of time in having to reestablish communications. Well, fast forward from 2017, today, most organizations have experienced a dramatic increase in the amount of communications capabilities that they have. You've got your email, of course, but you've also got your Slack or your Teams or your Zoom and your, you know, 14 other systems that all have some sort of comms capability built in. And so the assumption is that today, because all those are cloud-based, they wouldn't necessarily go down or be out or be unavailable like the systems that were on-premise that you were self-hosting back in 2017. The challenge is that today's attackers aren't looking to necessarily take those systems down. Scattered Spider, Lapsus, Ragnar Locker, all these demonstrated this. Actually, during SolarWinds, this was demonstrated as well. The adversary is actively looking to use those day-to-day communications channels you have to listen in and perform reconnaissance. They want to gather intelligence well ahead of their attack. And then during their attack, they want to maintain their persistence as much as possible or inform a future attack. And so what are they doing? They're listening to your incident response communications. I think it was late 21, Ragnar Locker, either late 21 or late 22, Ragnar Locker actually breached a French retail company. And the French retail company's internal incident response team was communicating on Teams. And they were discussing their ransom strategy. Do we pay the entire amount? Do we offer less? How do we go about doing this? Eventually, the threat actor got impatient. Ragnar Locker said, look, we are in the middle of your incident response chat. We are in your Teams. We are listening in. We know exactly what you're discussing. We are not fooled by your strategy because you've already told us what it is. And in order to prove the point, instead of just telling the company that, they actually posted live screenshots from inside of their Microsoft Teams chat for the whole world to see. When Western Digital got hacked, the threat actor was actually on their live call. I think it was either Zoom or some other video conferencing capability. And they tweeted pictures from the live call. And they did it to demoralize the incident response team. In other cases, they were taunting the incident responders. And so one of the challenges is today, while we have more communications capabilities than we've ever had in the past, those same communications capabilities that we use for day-to-day operations aren't necessarily built to be resilient during a cyber attack. They're not necessarily built specifically for these use cases that we, you know, now collectively have started calling out-of-band capabilities, right? Or out-of-band use cases. These are use cases that warrant an additional layer of protection, an additional level of security. So in this case, end-to-end encryption. How do you both end-to-end encrypt the communications while still being able to meet your regulatory, your statutory, and your legal requirements later, right? You could easily say, oh, yes, we'll just move to a Signal or a WhatsApp, and those are end-to-end encrypted, and we've already got a phone list up, and we're good. Well, none of those technologies that was meant for a consumer has user management, policy enforcement, remediation controls. One of your executives goes rogue. How do you ensure they were removed from all communications? You suddenly have to go to court and you need to produce an audit trail of who said what and to whom, when it was said, how it was consumed. How do you get that audit trail? Are you now going to collect all the devices? Are you going to image everyone's phones? How are you going to prove that that is the entirety of the record that should have been there and not just what you could get 3 months after the fact when people have likely been deleting certain things along the way? Or what happens if they accidentally set a retention policy that was too short and now you need these communications much further out from what they retained, right? So there are a lot of problems around that. You want for these kinds of use cases to use technologies that are specifically developed for these kinds of scenarios. And that's actually where Armortext comes in. It's the reason why we exist. We are a secure, out-of-band collaboration capability that meets that higher threshold for security through user plus device-specific end-to-end encryption, but also one that allows you to continue to meet all of your other enterprise and regulatory requirements, including an ability to retain end-to-end encrypted archives that aren't a part of the attack surface area for one of these attackers.
Okay. Interesting. Very interesting. Thanks for sharing. And again, to be fair and objective, just want to ensure that listeners recognize that there are a variety of providers out there. Due diligence, seek the best guidance and service that you can get. But in the big scheme of things, It doesn't matter what you call it, whether you call it a tabletop exercise, whether you call it a simulation. The more important thing is, are you prepared to deal with the different types of threat scenarios? And are you constantly preparing? Because, you know, the hackers are innovating. The threats are forever evolving. So to stay at a high level of readiness, tabletop exercises or similar types of activities must be part of the cybersecurity governance of any organization. I find it hard to believe that this is something, it's difficult to get a buy-in for tabletop exercises from top management. However, on the other side, I can understand that if they are not done well, and if there is no demonstrable ROI, then organizations can be skeptical. And some of the research out there tends to suggest just that. However, as we are coming to a close for this episode, I'd like to end on a positive note that if done well, tabletop exercises can be very, very effective. Like every episode, I'd like my guests to always have the final word. So, Navroop, you get to share your final words of wisdom. Anything that you want to add or reinforce, it's your time.
Tabletops don't have to be perfect, and the perfect shouldn't be the enemy of the good. We actually encourage organizations to just begin, right? You don't have to hire a facilitator and get everyone together all at once. You can start by grabbing a few folks to work through the modules like the ones in our guide or others. You can start with that card game. You can do all of that and have a lightweight discussion, and then you can build off of that to more mature exercises. You just have to start. Right. Again, for anyone who's looking for a set of tabletop exercises, absolutely go to the ones in our guide at armortext.com/cyber-tabletop. But if you look at that resource, the reality is it's a vendor agnostic resource. We ask you communications and collaboration questions in there. We have injects in it that will challenge some of the assumptions your executives are going to be making around a variety of topics. But we do so in a manner that is industry agnostic and vendor agnostic, because what we want is for everyone to be better. Right? I'm less worried about whether or not you think our tool is the right fit for your organization. You're going to have your own requirements for figuring that out. We do lay out some things that we think you should consider. And so take that framework, adapt it, build out your list of requirements, and then survey the entire marketplace to choose what's right for you.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more, Navroop. Thank you for that very enlightening discussion. Greatly appreciated.
Thank you.
A special thanks to Navroop Mitta for his time and insights. If you liked what you heard, please leave the podcast a rating and share it with your network. Also, subscribe to the show so you don't miss any new episodes. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode.
The information contained in this podcast is for general guidance only. The discussants assume no responsibility or liability for any errors or omissions in the content of this podcast. The information contained in this podcast is provided on an as-is basis with no guarantee of completeness, accuracy, usefulness, or timeliness. The opinions and recommendations expressed in this podcast are those of the discussants and not of any organization.